Okay. Is everybody ready? Well, good morning. Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and I are eager to highlight the importance of computer science in Iowa and encourage participation in Hour of Code. We're pleased to be here this morning with Megan Wise, a student at Stillwell Junior High in West Des Moines, who will demonstrate how coding can be done. We're also pleased to be joined by Valerie Jansonius. Is that right?
Close enough.
Jansonius.
Okay. Valerie Jansonius. Boy, after Teacher of the Year in this, I mean, and she is a computer teacher at Waukee Elementary School, who will talk about what she teaches and why. Making sure students are comfortable with at least the basics of computer science will keep them from missing out on potential opportunities in college and career training. Here's a key statistic to keep in mind. Of the nearly 62,000 new and existing STEM jobs projected in Iowa by the year 2020, a little over half will be computer and mathematical sciences, according to the Georgetown University Center for Education and the Workforce. Meanwhile, employers already tell us it's often hard to fill these job openings. It's clear we have work to do. Here is one way to get started. This week marks the Hour of Code campaign, where students all over the world will code together, including students from here in Iowa. The Hour of Code is sponsored by code.org, an opportunity for every K through 8 student in Iowa to experience the simplicity of computer programming in a fun, engaging way that might inspire the next generation of innovators. That's why we're designating this week as Computer Science Education Week in Iowa. And now it's my pleasure to sign a proclamation for that designation. Here's the official proclamation. I won't read it, but basically this makes this week Computer Science Education Week in Iowa. And with that, I want to turn it over to our Lieutenant Governor, Kim Reynolds, who is the co-chair of the Governor's Advisory Council on STEM Education.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. And as co-chair of the Governor's STEM Advisory Council, I am proud that the council is really helping to promote the Hour of Code campaign. You know, awareness is growing that the basic understanding of coding is really important for today's students. In Sioux City, for example, the district is establishing a specialty elementary school in computer programming. Kids already are using Java-based script programs to better engage in math and reading instruction. And you might be interested to know that part of the inspiration for really launching this specialty school in Sioux City came from Hannah Renz, who is, Hannah is a Sioux City student and member of the State Board of Education. And she presented the Hour of Code to the district administrative team. And when the Sioux City Chamber was down here, Hannah was talking to us about it then, that she was passionate about coding and she wanted to do everything she could to not only encourage that in Sioux City, but to help encourage that all across the state of Iowa. Computer science is a growing topic of conversation across the country, and according to the Education Commission of the States, at least 13 states require or are moving to require that students be allowed to apply specific computer science courses towards the completion of math, science, or foreign language graduation requirements. As countries from Singapore to Estonia are now focused on teaching students computer programming skills, we're grateful that Google made a $20,000 gift to the Governor's STEM Advisory Council. And with that gift, it was to be used to encourage schools to take part in the Hour of Code. Six Iowa schools that registered by November 14th to participate in the Hour of Code will receive awards. One will receive $10,000 award from code.org, and 5 schools will receive $4,000 awards thanks to Google's participation in really helping raise awareness of the Hour of Code. Award announcements will be made later this morning. Meanwhile, schools across Iowa are still welcome to sign up, so we want to encourage you to still participate if you've not done that, and encourage your students to participate in the Hour of Code. It's a great way to introduce students to the fundamentals of coding, and parents can also sign up their children to take part from home at code.org, so you can do it at school or at home. And now I'd like to turn the podium over to Megan Wise to tell us a little bit about her background and how she got involved in coding. Megan?
Hello, I'm Megan Weiss, and I'm 12 years old, and I'm in 7th grade at Stillwell Junior High in West Des Moines. Like most kids, I have a lot of different interests that I enjoy. I love playing soccer, basketball, and the saxophone. I also love making things work through coding or computer programming. I'm excited to be here and help kick off Computer Science Week in Iowa. I hope to show you how all ages can participate and learn. Some of you may be unsure as to what coding actually is. I know my grandparents and my little brother wonder, and that is okay. I want to break it down. Think about your cell phone, which I'm guessing you use for just about everything now. News, games, calendars, and social media. Have you ever wondered how all of your apps actually work and how your phone knows exactly what you want it to do? The answer is through coding, and it is important we learn more about this because it is our future. I was inspired to learn more about coding by my 6th grade math teacher. He showed us a website called code.org, which is a great introduction to coding. He encouraged our class to participate in the Hour of Code. There are tutorials that show you how to make a game, an app, a website, or even a robot. The possibilities are endless, and who wouldn't be excited about making their own app or game? In a minute, I'm going to show you something that I have created to give you a sample of coding. Since I love soccer, I've made a program of a soccer player scoring a goal. I will show you that program in a moment. I'm going to turn it over to Mrs. Jansonius, a technology teacher at Waukee Elementary School.
All right, thanks, Megan. I would like to start by thanking Governor Branstad and Lieutenant Governor for inviting Reynolds for inviting me to speak today. As Governor Branstad mentioned earlier, I am a kindergarten through 5th grade technology teacher at Waukee Elementary. But prior to that, I taught 2nd grade in the same district. And honestly, if someone had told me 2 years ago that I would be teaching students how to write code, I wouldn't have believed it. But at the beginning of the school year last year, a fellow colleague just told me about code.org, which others have mentioned, and I decided to just try it out with my students, and they really enjoyed it. One of them is here today as well. So some teachers across the state may be thinking that they would like to teach coding, but they don't really know where to start. And furthermore, how can they teach it if they never learned it themselves, which I didn't. So I can understand that hesitation because I felt it as well. However, I am reminded of a quote that I came across on Twitter the other day. A great teacher is someone who can learn from their students, who can learn with them, and who learns for them. So it's okay if, you know, fellow teachers don't know about coding, and I think kids would love to know that their teacher's learning right alongside them. And again, that's the great thing about code.org is that there truly are lessons for all age levels. There are many other great resources available for elementary teachers. Megan's using Scratch, Tinker, Code Academy, and Code Avengers are a few others. There are many reasons why computer science, I truly think, should be taught at the elementary level. It helps students think critically and problem solve. And also, I believe strongly that kids should not just consume technology mindlessly, rather they should use it to create, again, like Megan is. So some of my students, though, wanted to share what they think about computer science, because we've done code.org since last year. And fifth grader Elsa says that she likes it because she gets to experiment and problem solve. And first grader Colton came up to me after the first day of doing coding. He said, Mrs. Jansonius, I like it because I think it helps my brain problem solve. Like, you got it. So while I realize that not all of my students will grow up to be computer programmers, I do know that they will need to be risk takers and problem solvers. So that is why I teach coding at the elementary level. And I'll turn it back over to Megan.
So we're gonna move that over.
Perfect.
Here's the program that I created through scratch.mit.edu. Scratch allows users to create a program where they can make characters act, talk, and move. Coding is all about practicing and not giving up. It is pretty much guaranteed that you will not get it perfect the first time. That is okay. Coding is more of trial and error. If something doesn't work, try again and again until you get it right. I could do this all day and keep scoring on the poor goalie. I'm going to make a few changes to the program to help the goalie block the goal. To do that, I just need to change the coordinates on the soccer ball to make it stop before it reaches the goalie's hands. The goalie has now blocked the shot. You can see how easy it is to make things happen when you know how to code. I hope you'll all be inspired to go home and participate in the Hour of Code. Thank you.
Okay, now we'll open it for your questions. I want to thank Megan and Valerie, and well, I'll tell you, we learned a lot from a 12-year-old today, so thank you very much, Megan. Do you have questions that you would like to ask on this, either Megan, Valerie, or the Lieutenant Governor, or myself? Well, as you know, we have in recent years really embarked on, and we've gotten great bipartisan support for STEM education. And as we're getting into this, we're seeing obviously the kind of courses, and including some courses in agriculture as well, are important in this field, and I think should be given credit in terms of math and science towards high school graduation. So this is something that obviously we will work with the Board of Education on, and also, if need be, with the legislature. But I think we need to recognize it's much different than it was when I was in school or many of you were in school, and we need to make sure that the education that we're providing is something that prepares our students of today for the jobs of tomorrow. And this is this whole field is an exciting field that offers some great job opportunities, and it's a fun thing for students to participate in.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing, just to give them the exposure to hands-on, critical thinking, knowledge-based programs where they can start to see for themselves that it's fun, it's important, they like it, and then it really challenges them to take the next step. At least we have, it's about 13 states that have already done that, so we've got some great criteria out there that other states have implemented, so we'll continue to look at that as we continue to work with science, technology, engineering, math, and making sure that our students have the skills that they need to be competitive in a knowledge-based global economy. So we are continuing to review it, and that's part of what the STEM Advisory Council has been tasked with, so working with the Department of Education.
Why don't you go up?
Yeah, there are courses, honestly, for pre-readers, so as young as four. The course on code.org is specifically for K-8 students. So, and anyone can go in. It's not something they just have to go to school. It's just literally go to code.org, and they explain everything there. No, so with the first graders that I did it with, I mean, many of them are readers, but they have block arrows that they move around to problem solve, the puzzles. So they use that versus the more detailed wording in Scratch.
So. And correct me if I'm wrong, yeah. I think the curriculum is actually provided with code.org. So it's really meant to make it as seamless and as easy as it can for the teachers to encourage them to utilize the software. So yep. I just want to commend, I assume all of them are that way,
yes,
but really
absolutely.
Designed to help educators who are extremely busy and have very little time to really make it simple so that they can implement that into their existing curriculum.
Yes. Yep.
Other questions? Yes. Well, I think maybe Valerie can answer that, but as she pointed out, she didn't have a background in this, and she's able to teach it. So I think our current teachers can do this. Let me give you the chance to answer.
No, without a doubt. Like I said, I taught second grade, and it was something that I had never done before. And so, obviously, I think we should always be looking to hire teachers who have strength in those STEM areas. But, I mean, any teacher could go online tonight, spend 15, maybe 20 minutes on code.org, get an iPad card, or check, you know, go to the lab and do it tomorrow with their kids, really, truly. Yep.
Other questions?
Can I talk to
Megan?
Yes,
yeah, really. Megan. You step around.
Maybe both, right?
Yeah. What I would like to do when I grow up is I would like to be an architect, and architects need to know about STEM. They need to be skilled in science and technology and engineering and math. So, yeah, I want to do this with my future.
What's your message to other kids your age who think coding, wow, that sounds like, or even adults who think that's what you're going to want to tell them?
Well, coding is our future, so we should all learn to code because, like Governor Branstad said, oh, in 2020, over 50% of the jobs will be in computer sciences.
Is it easier than you thought it would be, or is it harder?
Well, there's different difficulty levels. Code.org, there's blocks you drag over, and on Scratch, it's a little more difficult because you put the coordinates in, so really anyone could do it.
Does it challenge you to keep looking for that tougher, that next harder application?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really challenges you.
Megan, how old are you?
I'm 12.
How do you spell your name?
M-E-G-A-N. W-E-I-S.
Other questions? Well, we think this was pretty exciting, and, you know, this is an example of what's going on in our schools today, and it shows how things are changing very dramatically, and how coding is a very important skill set that can be learned, and you know, you can just go online. Even those of us that never learned it in school can go online and learn this.
And in Megan's words, it's our future, right? Coding is our future, so thank you.
Okay, we would open it for other questions, unless you have any other questions on this. I do want to thank both Megan and Valerie for joining us today and for doing this demonstration. Questions on other subjects you have today?
Governor, you've been talking about fuel taxes or revenue for roads and how you would do that in the next session. There was a report out from LSA last month that said that just doing a 10-cent gas tax increase probably wouldn't get you all the revenue.
I've said that all throughout the campaign. Yeah, it's surprising. Well, I think what I've pointed out is people are going to more and more fuel-efficient vehicles, which consume less gasoline, less diesel fuel. We're also seeing a movement towards compressed natural gas for trucks and things like this. So what I've asked Paul Trombino to do is put together a whole series of different options that would be protected by the constitutional provisions of the Road Use Tax Fund that would have the users pay for the improvements that we need to make to our roads and bridges. And he's done that, and now it is our intention to visit with legislative leaders from both houses, from both parties, to see if we can build a consensus to take action on funding for the Road Use Tax Fund that meets the needs of counties, cities, and the state, and hopefully to do this in the 2015 session. I think the timing is right in light of the fact that fuel prices have dropped significantly. That also benefits us in the budget as well. It's helping businesses, it's helping individual people that obviously it's a big item in many people's budget, for especially middle class and low income people, the cost of commuting to work and traveling to visit friends and relatives. So having lower fuel, and I just saw yesterday on my way back from church that gas was down to 243.9. That's the lowest it's been in a long time. That was on Fluor Drive, by the way, in case you're interested.
Do you expect that it's going to be a combination or a hybrid?
I do think it a hybrid or a combination of different sources makes more sense. And this question was asked many times throughout the campaign, and I said that that approach to me made a lot more sense. But I also understand it needs to have a bipartisan consensus, and we need to have support of both Democrats and Republicans in the House and Senate. And so that's why I intend to, I've already talked with Senator Gronstall, but I intend to talk with all the leaders, both in a majority and minority in the House and Senate, to see if indeed we can develop that consensus and take action on it this session.
What are the best options or the elements of that conference?
Well, I'm not going to try to dictate what those elements should be. I want it to be truly a bipartisan consensus and get input from all four caucuses in the legislature. I think that's the best way to try to get something done. And I think it needs to be done on a pay-as-you-go basis, not with borrowed money, and it needs to be protected by the constitutional provisions of the Road Use Tax Fund so it can't be used for another purpose.
Wouldn't it help start the conversation if you offered a proposal to start with?
That would be a target to shoot at, and I think it would be much better if instead we approach it with an open mind and accepting input from all different persuasions on this issue. I've had some discussions, for instance, even with the people representing the truck stops, who you would think generally would be against this, but they also have some ideas of things that other states have done that we might consider. So I've tried to really approach it with a very much an open mind, recognizing this is a difficult and challenging issue, but if we work together, I think we can get something done this year.
Iowans for Tax Relief, I believe, is the group that came out late last week opposing any kind of fuel tax increase. That probably won't be the last. Is there any concern on your part that it'll be those outside pressures on legislators that...
Well, they're always...
from happening?
Well, first of all, there's always going to be those different groups and different pressures on legislators not to act, but I think that looking at a more innovative approach and one that takes in mind the concerns of motorists and low-income and middle-income people who have a challenge meeting some of the costs of commuting to work, I think by approaching it in the way we are, I think it improves the chances of trying to get the bipartisan consensus we're looking for. The last time this was done, I think, well, I was governor at that time too, was 1988. And that's when we passed the Transportation 2000 initiative, which made it possible for us to develop a lot of these commercial industrial highway network that, you know, the Avenue of the Saints and the four-lane highway that goes to Southwest Iowa, many other facilities we have across the state. Well, I'm not going to comment on that. I mean, we've seen a lot of political ads, and I just encourage people to look at the merits of the issue. And so I, you know, I've not been involved in the media advertising campaign, and I do think it's an issue that needs to be thoughtfully approached. And I think the way we're going about it, giving all four caucuses an opportunity for input and to be part of the solution, makes sense. Well, this is an economic development trip. We have it's a busy schedule. We're leaving, I think, before 6 in the morning, so I'm going to be getting up extremely early. And we have a whole series of calls, primarily in the insurance and financial services industry. Our economic development director, Debbie Durham, and Nick Gerhart, who runs who is our insurance commissioner, will accompany me along with other economic development professionals from communities in the state of Iowa. But the calls we've got, I can't divulge the names of the companies. Many of these, some of them already have operations in Iowa. We hope they will expand their employment base and make additional investments. Others are prospects that we hope will choose Iowa. And we think we got a great story to tell. We've had success in previous missions like this, and we're very hopeful that, you know, we'll be there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning. We're hopeful good things will come of it. Well, as I mentioned, the insurance commissioner will be with us, and I think he has some additional calls into the ones that we're making together, but we do have a number of insurance companies that have already got operations in Iowa. We are hopeful they will look at expanding. Others will look at the very favorable insurance environment we have here. Also, financial services, another area that Iowa has some real strength in, so we'll be calling on a number of companies in those fields and some other companies as well.
Your wife is joining you on the trip.
Right.
Do you need any personal time to show?
One night. Tuesday night but I think a lot of the other members of the delegation will join us for dinner. But other than that, it's pretty much wall-to-wall meetings throughout the time, and even on Wednesday night we have a business dinner. So, and that's typically what we do on these trade missions. We try to make them, these calls, as productive as possible, and call on key decision makers that hopefully, and obviously I think Iowa is in a very strong position in this area, and we want to take advantage of it.
We're looking at all of the options, but that's what they've done in some of the other states, is they've allowed computer science to qualify as a math course or a science course. So that's part of what we'll be doing as we continue to research this, take a look at what other states have done, take a look at some of the statistics they have, the metrics that they put in place. So all of the above, Joyce.
In agriculture, we have a similar situation with biosciences as well.
That's true, yeah.
So you've got this in the computer science side, got it in the bioscience side. We just want to make sure, you know, a lot of what we've done in education is based on a model that's over 100 years old. So we're trying to update it and make sure that it is preparing the students of today for the jobs of tomorrow.
All right. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
Governor.